Hello, I'm Lynn Ormudu. Welcome to Health Chat. A new report by UNAIDS, the United Nations AIDS Agency, says HIV targets set for 2020, which include reducing new infection rates and increasing access to treatment, will not be reached, partly due to unequal access to antiretroviral therapy and service disruptions caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. According to the report titled Seizing the Moment, 38 million people worldwide were infected with the HIV virus that causes AIDS in 2019, thus 1 million more people than in 2018. I spoke with UNAIDS Executive Director Winnie Byanyima and asked her to give us an assessment of the HIV/AIDS pandemic. Take a listen.
When I joined the organization at the end of last year, we were actually struggling to meet the targets for 2020, global HIV targets. But we were struggling. We could see that we will come to the middle of this year when we issue our annual report and find we are off target. And indeed, we are. But the COVID situation is threatening to blow us completely off course. What do I mean? Our report came out a week ago. We call it seizing the moment, to be positive. But it showed tremendous progress over 10 years in reducing new infections, in putting people on treatment, even reducing deaths. But it showed that this success is not shared equally across the world. And therefore, we are not able to achieve global targets because there are many other parts that aren't moving fast enough. The good news is that Sub-Saharan Africa is the most hit region with HIV, but it's the one that has made the fastest progress. Some of the results are so interesting. For example, the whole world reduced in 10 years new infections by 38%. No, actually not. The global average is 23%. But Africa managed to reduce it by 38%. South Africa alone, the worst hit country, reduced by 53%. A small country like South Africa made huge progress on putting people on treatment and keeping them on treatment. It hit the targets, which we call 90-90-90, and moved it to 95-90, went above the targets. Small, poor country. So if it can do it, why can't the rest of the world? But then we saw through these results that some other regions, new infections are even rising, like Eastern Europe, Central Asia, rising by 72%. The same with Asia, the same with Latin America. The big progress is here in Africa. And we have to understand that that's because of political commitment, putting resources there. And for that, we have to thank development partners, particularly in the United States, the Europeans, and the Global Fund. It's also about empowering communities to be able to be at the center to fight for their lives. It's about respecting human rights. And yeah, it's about being focused on results. So we have a mixed picture. In terms of deaths, for example, my sister, we lost 690,000 people last year to AIDS. We don't need to lose even one person because now we have treatment that if you're positive, you can go on and live healthy for a long life. But that's 690,000 lost. The target was 500,000, so we are above. I told you we had new infections globally, 1.7 million. Target was 500,000, so it's more than three times. That shows you how much we are off course.
So it's really a mixed picture, as you said, when we look at what's happening in Eastern Europe, South America, and other regions versus Africa. Can you kind of give us a sense of some of the reasons when we look at the increase versus the reduction from one region to another, what is causing the increase in one region and the reduction in Sub-Saharan Africa, for example?
Good question. The epidemic is different in each region. In Eastern and Southern Africa, which are the two parts of Africa that are most hit, the epidemic is driven heterosexually, sex between men and women. There's also gay sex, and there's also sex workers as a very vulnerable group. So we find that there has been a lot of effort being put in to raise awareness for people to go for prevention. So men going for condoms, sticking to one partner, and that is often combined with putting people on treatment, staying on treatment, then you can't infect when your viral load is suppressed. We also use voluntary medical male circumcision. That's another factor that helps to prevent. So these combinations of prevention and treatment is what has driven infections down. But the infections, the vulnerability of women and girls remains much higher than boys and men of the same age. There is a real concern, and that's driven by women and girls not having control of their own bodies, intimate partner violence, and a culture that accepts violent masculinities, harmful masculinities. So there's a lot to do at the level of changing social norms, tackling attitudes and behaviors. That's Africa. Now, in Eastern Europe, because the driver is mainly gay sex and people who inject drugs, the governments there have not paid attention to those groups in terms of giving them their rights, giving them the space to come forward for treatments. They remain underground, and they remain unable to access prevention and treatment to stop this infection growing. That's the real reason. Human rights, removing the social barriers so that they can access. The same with Latin America. Latin America is a very macho society, but it's also a society where young people are so exposed to Western culture, and there are many young people who are, say, in same-sex relationships. But that very Catholic region of traditions does not, has a stigma and discrimination and even laws against gay, transgender, people of non-binary sex. They can't come out. So again, it's human rights. It's social barriers. And once we tackle those, we can reduce infections.
So interventions, there shouldn't be like a cookie-cutter approach. It really should be catered to each region, each culture, if you will, and each society according to what their specific needs are.
Absolutely. For example, for Africa, the biggest intervention that could cause a big change for us today is to put all girls and even boys into secondary school. If a girl can stay in secondary school up to the end of high school, her vulnerability reduces by 50%. 50%. If you also include sexual reproductive health services, comprehensive sexual education so that a girl knows her choices, understands her body, and can stand up for her rights. If you include this in the education system, you reduce the vulnerability of women and girls even further. So that is an approach for Africa. It can work. But if you are in Eastern Europe, you just need to know how to use less forceful policing against people who inject drugs and use a health approach that brings them up, that respects them, and they come out for treatment. So it's different approaches. People must be respected, their human rights respected, and services must reach them. But Corona is disrupting us.
Can you elaborate on what kind of impact you are seeing with regards to how COVID-19 is affecting the fight against HIV/AIDS?
For Africa, it is two colliding epidemics. And it is really, it's going to have a devastating impact, and already is. First, we see that our countries were already weak economically. And that meant that they didn't have the resources to plow in health systems. Many countries had already been increasing their debt servicing at the cost of health. I can give you an example of Zambia, which in 3 years, between 2015 and 18, increased debt servicing by 700% and cut its health budget by 30%. Kenya had cut health by 9% in the last 3 years and increased debt servicing. So this situation found our countries weak. Health systems were already crumbling. Now with Corona, there is repurposing. They are trying to see what is there for HIV that we built, the labs, the services, the health workers are being diverted to fight Corona. This means that now there are disruption in services for HIV. This is dangerous. We have done an estimate and we found that if these disruptions continue for 6 months at a severe rate, as we are seeing in some countries, we might lose another 500,000 people in Africa in addition to what we are losing already. We might have reversals for children, new infections of children, taking us back to 10 years ago. So there is a danger there because of the dropping the ball on one epidemic to deal with another because of financial constraint. We have to try to keep the ball, two balls in the air. But secondly, we're seeing lockdowns. Lockdowns are hurting the vulnerable people who are the ones with HIV or vulnerable to HIV. Sex workers are being denied food and being blamed for transmitting the virus in my region of Eastern Africa because they are saying you are the ones sleeping with truck drivers. So they are being denied the services others are enjoying. Gay men who are already criminalized are being arrested because of their lifestyle. So we are seeing the vulnerable people who are already vulnerable to HIV being made more vulnerable. Then some of the rules are you can't move. They are not being treated as a special category needing special dispensation to go to get their medicine. So lockdown rules are hurting. Mostly young women, girls and women, we see the violence against them in the household increasing, more sexual violence. And this means there'll be more infections, then more teenage pregnancies, maybe early marriage. We are also seeing that by not being in school and economies crashing, returning to school for girls will be a problem, for poor girls. They will not, parents will not be affording because they've not been earning. Governments don't have money to give it for free. So, as usual, in our patriarchal society, a boy might go back, a girl might stay. So all these are risks that we are monitoring, and they are all adding to vulnerability to HIV and to inequalities widening in society.
A lot to tackle, a lot of risks there. So what can be done? I mean, it's so many things at the same time.
I would say that the most important thing is, one, at the global level, that the governments of the whole world see this as a global problem and approach it from a perspective of global solidarity. Where there are resources, help where there are none. Because we are in it together, no one is safe unless we are all safe. That's what our Secretary General Guterres has said, and is right. So that's one. Two, it's important to be creative about how resources are used. Pull facilities together and fight on two fronts at the same time. Don't drop one. That's another thing. Three, it's time to decriminalize, to respect human, decriminalize same-sex relationships. Honestly, this issue should be left to churches, mosques, and mullahs to be the ones to address it from their perspective of the churches. But governments should repeal those laws so that public services, health services, are available for everybody. Because the government is there to deliver to all citizens, not to judge and say, you are not going to heaven, so you won't get your treatment. It's not the business of government to judge, to make those moral judgments. So remove the criminal laws that stop sex workers and gay people and transgender from coming forward. That's important. And then in the hospitals and clinics, keep a human rights perspective. You're there to deliver health rights to all, not to judge people, not to judge a girl because she wants a contraceptive. That's not your business. Offer it. Let her mother counsel her on other moral issues. So getting services to be non-judgmental, non-discriminatory, to take out stigma is another big challenge. So those are some, and putting communities, put the resources to the communities, they are the ones who know. Who can tell an African woman in her market how to social distance? They are the ones who know. If you want people to wash their hands 5 times a day and there's no water, they are the ones who know how, the women who know how to find water to wash hands. So get communities to shape their own interventions. Give them money and let them work on it. Don't come with your own ideas, lock them up, deny them food, and then remember later that, oh, they're about to die. No, let them shape the response for themselves. Those are the key messages.
Well, it is time for a short break. When we return, we'll have more of my discussion with UNAIDS Executive Director, Winnie Byanyima.
Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Fali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Welcome back to Health Chat. For those of you joining us late, tonight we have my exclusive interview with UNAIDS Executive Director Winnie Byanyima. In part two of our conversation, she elaborates on some of the remaining challenges in Africa in the fight against HIV/AIDS and what can be done to make more progress.
Now, a lot of progress has been made over the years, and as you mentioned, when it comes to addressing HIV/AIDS on the continent, one such progress has been prevention of mother-to-child transmission, not only in Africa, but also in other parts of the world. There have been progress on that front. Yet Nigeria has one of the highest rates of mother-to-child transmission in the world. So what can be done in Nigeria particularly?
You're so right. Some countries like small islands in the Caribbean, like Jamaica and others, have already eradicated mother-to-child transmission because the treatments are there that a mother can take to prevent her from passing it to her baby. But Nigeria and a number of other countries, not only Nigeria, are actually seeing reversals, are losing the ground on that. And why? We know why. It's mothers who don't come for antenatal and postnatal. So there are reasons, and they are very well researched, why many women don't come. Sometimes the service is too far away. Sometimes there are user fees. In this part of West Africa, user fees are stopping women from going to clinics. Do you know that in some countries, you have women being arrested after they've had their baby? They are held prisoners in the clinic until somebody goes and sells their piece of land or something to come and pay for being in the hospital to deliver a baby. That is how user fees are. They are violating human rights, and they are ridiculous, because while you're keeping her in the hospital, someone who needs the bed is not getting it, as you are trying to extort money from a poor person. Then you also have women who actually come, are put on treatment, but then fall out of care. There are also many reasons we have researched them, why women and men even fail to stay on treatment. Very often the service is provided in ways that are so inconvenient, too far away. You go there, you line up for a whole day, you've got to earn food for your children, you've left them at home, or you go there and they say they stock out, come back next week, come back the other day. Many things about services not being close enough and in ways that are accessible. Then there are also issues of hiding. Let's face it, many women are blamed for carrying the virus by their husbands. They keep it a secret. So all these factors, both social factors, factors to do with clinics and inadequacies there, supplies, have to be dealt with so that women can stay on calm, antenatal, stay on treatment and not pass it to children. We lost 95,000 children, babies and children to HIV last year. We are having fewer children on treatment than adults. It's a shame on us. It suggests that we adults are fighting for our lives, but we are not fighting enough for our children. That's not good.
Mrs. Janyema, to what extent is stigma still causing a serious impediment in fighting HIV/AIDS? After all these years, stigma has been such a big problem in the beginning of the pandemic, but it seems like it's still a problem. So talk to us about the impact of stigma and how it can be addressed, or what is being done to address it.
You know, Lenore, you've touched an important point. Stigma is still killing people, especially young people. That's why it is so sad. You see, the epidemic has been around for a long time. Treatment still has no cure, and it still has no vaccine. But there are treatments to make it a manageable disease that shouldn't take lives away. So now, because people are not seeing dead bodies being buried every day, young people are growing up without knowing the danger. So they are not taking care. But when they do get the virus, if they do get it, they are too scared to come forward, because today, if you are HIV, there is a huge stigma has come back again in a big way, because nobody's getting it. So if you get it, there is a sense that you've done something horribly wrong in your life. So stigma has come back strongly, partly because of the success, partly because of young people who don't know the past. So then another thing about stigma is that there is stigma that comes with other diseases that are associated with HIV, like TB. A lot of people who have depressed immunity end up with TB. There's a horrible stigma around TB. People with TB have in the past been treated so badly, but it still exists, that stigma. So all that makes people not want to come out to get treated because they are frowned upon by the rest of society. Now, this is where communities matter. It's only communities where you can have real campaigns at the community level that destigmatize, that take away the blame on the patient or the person carrying the virus. Communities have in the past done so much to fight stigma and to cause behavior change in society, but funding for them has become less and less. And that is a pity, and it is causing a research in some areas where stigma had gone. So we need to keep investing in communities, in leaders who speak against stigma, community leaders, such as religious leaders, such as artists, such as young musicians. In Nigeria, you have your Nollywood. That is an industry that can do amazing things to remove stigma on HIV. If I had a chance to go to Nigeria, that's where I'd head first, to look for all those stars, to ask them to be champions. That is how you break stigma.
That's a good point, because celebrities can play an important role in spreading messages. That's very, very true. Now let's talk about innovations, because, you know, of course, doing the same thing over and over again may breed results, but it's important to come up with new ideas, new solutions. So what type of innovations is UNAIDS promoting or pushing for?
We still are pushing companies, research institutions, universities to continue looking for a vaccine, but treatments. We have some treatments that are keeping people well, but there are gaps here and there. For example, we need better and better treatments for children. If you are a child and you are positive, your mother passed it to you, you're going to be on a tablet for the rest of your life. Think about a little girl of 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 keeping a secret about her tablet because she fears her peers. She would be better off if there was, say, an injection that she can have once in 6 months, but not hide every day to swallow a tablet. So better treatments that suit people where they are. The same with how young men don't want to go to clinics to test. We are now moving towards self-testing and even receiving your antiretroviral tablets at an ATM in a mall rather than to line up at a clinic. We need more innovations also on prevention. Take sex workers. Sex workers know that they are at risk, but there are some men who insist on unprotected sex, and sometimes it gets difficult to say no. We have something called PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, but PrEP is something you take before so that when you have unprotected sex, you don't get the virus. But PrEP also is not easy for young women to go to access.
And finally, as the UNAIDS executive director, what keeps you up at night and what are your hopes?
Well, my hope is that we will beat this epidemic by 2030. And every day I'm thinking of what are the new things we haven't done that we can do that will get us there? Because doing the same like we've done for 30 years won't get us to the finish line. So I worry a lot about girls and women in Africa in particular, because this sign of HIV vulnerability 4 times more is just a red flag. It shows that there are so many other areas where women and girls' lives are miserable, are so unequal. So HIV is just one issue. So when will we get our girls all in school? When will we get them all to be healthy? When will we get every girl to come out and find a job and control her life and not be beaten in a marriage? These things bother me. The poverty, the inequality of women and girls bothers me. Violence bothers me. So those things keep me awake. But what gives me hope is that there are movements of people fighting on the same side. I'm an activist. I work with civil society. I see companies also rising. So for me, when I see people rise, I sleep well, because I know change comes from people's movements, from the power of people.
Winnie Byanyima, Executive Director of UNAIDS, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Lenore.
That's it for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guest, Winnie Byanyima, Executive Director of the United Nations AIDS Agency, UNAIDS. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/VOA Health Chat and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently, and strive to make every day a healthy day.